Well, good morning to everyone. We're going to consider a lesson towards the end of the book of Judges, but we'll set that up here in just a moment. It's good to be back with you. I did have the opportunity to preach at the Fremont congregation in Ohio. The congregation there, I guess, I don't even know how many years. It's got to be over 20 that every year I've been able to speak at the congregation. And have grown to know them. Brother Ted Bowen passed away. He has been there for a long, long time. It's his son that's over here at College View. It's his grandsons, Brett and David, who you know that are in the dentistry field. But anyways, good to see them and be away. 24 years of being in a camp bunk bed in Toledo, Ohio, I guess 20. 23 minus COVID is plenty. One of the things that's funny is there's the bunk beds. There's no telling how old the bunk beds are. The camp's over 100 years old. But there's a bar under, if you sleep on the bottom bunk, there's a bar on the bottom of the other one that you can use to pull yourself up. I woke up two nights, one at Lisa's, well, maybe both times at Lisa's mom's house, reaching for that bar. I guess that means you spent too much time in one of those bunks. But you also, if you're not careful, you'll hit your head. But anyway, that's a chapter of our life that we'll miss, but kind of bittersweet, more sweet than bitter. But glad to be home and good to be with you. It's good to be with you Wednesday night, but good to see everyone. When God needed a leader to deliver his people out of the Egyptian bondage, he chose Moses. Moses, though he wasn't confident about his abilities, he did rule over the nation of Israel. He was a judge. He was a ruler and a judge over them. And Numbers chapter 12 and verse 3 says he was the meekest and most humble man on the face of the earth. And he was God's leader. And while Moses was leading the people, we read of Joshua, the son of Nun, who served by his side. I want you to look at a couple of passages in Exodus chapter 34, or 24 rather. We read something that Moses has an assistant. Moses has a servant that's there with him. In verse 13 of chapter 24, so Moses arose with his assistant Joshua, and Moses went up to the Mount of God. So many of the things that transpires in the life of Moses and his interaction with God, it's not just Moses, but Joshua is there. Also in chapter 33 and in verse 11, he is identified as Moses' servant, the young man who was the son of Nun. Again, that's Exodus chapter 33 and verse 11. And so it seems rather natural that after Moses died that God would speak to Joshua and he would choose him to lead his people into the promised land. Joshua chapter 1, if you'll look at Joshua chapter 1, I have a few verses here. Joshua chapter 1, let me get on the right place here on the screen. After the death of Moses, the servant of the Lord, it came to pass that the Lord spoke to Joshua, the son of Nun, Moses' assistant, saying. So God begins to use Joshua as his leader, as the one that would lead the people. Chapter 6 and verse 8 of Joshua, you'll see in that particular passage, or rather chapter 1 verse 6 and 8, it says, be strong and of good courage, Joshua 1 verse 6, for to this people you shall divide an inheritance in the land which I swore to their fathers to give them. Only be strong and very courageous that you may observe to do according to all the law which Moses my servant commanded you. Do not turn from it to the right hand or to the left that you may prosper wherever you go. And so we see in verse 8, this book of the law shall not depart from your mouth, but you shall meditate in it day and night that you may observe to do according to all that is written it. In it, for then you shall make your way prosperous, and then you shall have good success. And so Israel would take the land. And you have at the beginning of the book of Judges, so if you'll turn over now to Judges, you have this particular statement that is made when you begin to read the book. in Judges chapter 2 and verse 7. So the people served the Lord all the days of Joshua and all the days of the elders who outlived Joshua, who had seen all the great works of the Lord which he had done for Israel. Now Joshua the son of Nun, the servant of the Lord, died when he was 110 years old, and they buried him within the border of his inheritance at Timnath-Heres in the mountains of Ephraim on the north side of the Mount Gaash. And when all the generation had been gathered to their fathers, another generation arose after them who did not know the Lord nor the work which he had done for Israel. With the generation and the leadership gone, the next generation rose up not knowing Jehovah and not knowing his mighty works. What does that say about the importance of teaching the next generation about God? Well, we can see what happens all around us and what's happening in our own country as individuals are being raised up to not even know if there is a God or know anything about God. But how important is it for you and I, even as parents, and Steve mentioned in the prayer, bringing them up in the nurture and admonition of the Lord, to teach them, especially you and I who are Christians. Because when we have people who rise up and do not know God, this begins the long period of the judges and the stories that happen over and over in the judges. We don't read of a man who is chosen to lead after Joshua. When Joshua dies and the elders who were a part of that in the guidance and so forth and teaching, when they're gone, that generation rises up and they don't know anything. And so for a very long period of time, you go through the cycle of the judges, and you know very well that what happens is they sin. And when they sin, they are oppressed. God punishes them with one of the nations. And then under that oppression, they cry out. And when they cry out to God, God sends them a deliverer. Othniel, Ehud, Shamgar, Deborah, Gideon, Abimelech, so forth. The judges, deliverers. More so than we think of a judge sometimes as they're going to discern between what is right and wrong. And they would do something like that, but most of them are delivering them out of the hands of their oppressor. And then they would have some years of peace, and then all of a sudden they'd go back into sin. And we see that repeated over and over. But then we see this statement found at the end of the book when you go over to Judges chapter 17, and we find it a number of times. And one was our scripture reading, but let's look again at Judges chapter 17 and in verse 6. And we're going to look at this particular account, but it's found here. It says, "In those days there was no king in Israel. Everyone did what was right in his own eyes." It's repeated in chapter 18 and verse 1. It is said again in chapter 19 and verse 1. It is said in chapter 21 and verse 25, which was our scripture reading. Is it true that Israel did not have a king? I'm not asking you to answer, but I want you to answer that question in your head. Is it true that Israel did not have a king? Israel had a king. They did have leadership, and that leadership was God. They may not have had an earthly king or a leader like Moses or Joshua, but they did have the King of Kings and the Lord of Lords, the great I Am. They had Jehovah God of Israel. And so you look at 1 Samuel chapter 8 and verse 7 when you get past the time of the judges. And this is the passage where they go to Samuel and they ask for a king. And they ask for a king because they want to be like all the nations round about them. But I want you to notice, to make this point, did Israel have a king? Israel had always had a king, even under the days of Moses and Joshua. But they rose up not knowing God. And because they had no king, they had no leadership, they had no one, they did what was right in their own eyes. And so in 1 Samuel chapter 8 and verse 7, it says, "The Lord said to Samuel, 'Heed the voice of the people and all that they say to you, for they have not rejected you.'" Samuel felt rejected. He said, "No, they haven't rejected you. They have rejected me, that I should reign over them." So yes, Israel had a king. It was the great I am, the true and living God. We sing the song, "See the Monarch of Monarchs, come in majesty." And we sing this song. People will do whatever they want to do. They will do what is right in their own eyes when they do not see God reigning over them. So in the days of the judges, they did not know God. And because of that, they refused to have any type of rule over themselves. And so it was a failure of one generation to teach the other generation. And that generation rises up, and they no longer have that leadership, and like Joshua and the elders. And so what does it look like when that happens? What does it look like to reject God as king and do whatever is right in your own eyes? Well, that's what the end of the book of Judges is about. It is a picture of what it means to do whatever is right in your own eyes. Now, we don't have time to read chapters 19, 20, and 21. And to say something about those chapters, what we're going to read about in chapter 17 and 18 in the book of Judges with Micah and the tribe of Dan is described as doing what's right in your own eyes. But when you read 19 and you read 20 and 21, what transpires in those last chapters is horrific. And what's very sad is it's not the Gentile nations. These are God's people. His own people who are committing horrible, ungodly acts of sin. Such cruelty and violence. So I would encourage you, though we do not have time, to recall and perhaps read chapter 19, 20, and 21 and see it for your own eyes even further than what we are going to do because of time, to see what it looks like to do what is right in your own eyes. I tell you, there's a lot of uproar about the opening ceremonies of the Olympic Games over in Paris. I have not seen them. I've just heard things that happened. I've now even read this morning, Lisa showed me something where a member of the church had posted something and somebody responded by saying, oh, it had nothing to do with that. It had to do with all of the Greek gods. It's like that's better. But what happens when people do what's right in their own eyes? They open up an Olympic ceremony in such ungodly fashion as drag queens go along the streets, and I understand it was just terrible. Ungodliness. And we have a lot of debauchery in our country. We have New Orleans and all that goes on there, and it's not just there. We have a city called Sin City. And what happens in Vegas stays in Vegas, and things of that nature. We have ungodliness. But this is God's people. This is the people God chose, and what happens when God is not reigning and ruling over their life. So the story begins in Judges chapter 17. I want to look at the first six verses. Now there was a man from the mountains of Ephraim whose name was Micah. He said to his mother, "The 1,100s of shekel of silver that were taken from you, on which you put a curse, even saying in my ears, 'Here's the silver with me.' I took it." And his mother said, "May you be blessed by the Lord, my son." So when he had returned the 1,100 shekels of silver to his mother said, "I had wholly dedicated the silver from my hand to the Lord for my son to make a carved image and a molded image. Now therefore, I will return it to you." Thus he returned the silver to his mother. Then his mother took 200 shekels of silver and gave them to the silversmith, and he made it into a carved image and a molded image, and they were in the house of Micah. The man Micah had a shrine, made an ephod and a household idols. He consecrated one of his sons who became his priest. In those days, there was no king in Israel. Everyone did what was right in his own eyes. So there's what's going on. It's very clear as we go through this particular text that Micah's doing whatever he wants to do. He in fact, as you go through the text, they're even thinking that God is blessing them and helping them and listening to them, and yet all they're doing is what they want to do. So here's a man, Micah. He's dwelling in the mounts of Ephraim. His mother, as we read, had 1,100 shekels of silver, and apparently they had been stolen, and apparently Micah had taken them. In fact, she had placed a curse on that, and he had heard that, and so he returns the 1,100 shekels to his mother. But in telling her all this, look at the sad statement that she makes. "May you be blessed by the Lord, my son." And the sad thing is that the story will reveal that both she and Micah are ungodly Israelites serving idols. And she's clueless that the Lord is not with her to invoke a blessing upon anyone. "The Lord be with you, my son." Well, he's a thief. His mom's placed a curse on the shekels of silver, and he's returned them. But all of this happens when God is really not reigning over our lives. You know, we'll do whatever we want to do. And then in verse 3, it's all good. She said, that's okay, because she had already dedicated the shekels of silver to the Lord, and she had done so on behalf of her son. And so as he returns them, she takes 200 of those shekels, and she takes them to the silversmith, and she commissions him to make household idols, idol in this molten image. Now, what's the very first commandment of the Ten Commandments to God's special people? You would think that she would know this one, wouldn't you? "You shall have no other gods before me." Period. What are they doing? Making idols. Go to a silversmith. Now, we're seeing this in the book of Acts in the Gentiles nations behaving this way. But when there is that leadership and they do not recognize God, and that generation is untaught, well, this is what you can expect. Everybody doing what is right in their own eyes. And so what we see is that he makes the images using the 200 shekels of silver, the silversmith. And then what we find is that these images are now in Micah's house. In fact, his home is full of these false gods, these idols. And did you notice he makes an ephod in verse 5? Well, what is the ephod? Well, the ephod is what God had ordered Moses to have made for Aaron the high priest to wear. Most of you have taught the younger kids classes, and that's one of the activities you've done, where they put the different colors on the ephod. They color it, they make it, they do various things. This was something God specifically gave to the high priest as part of his garments. Well, Micah, he has one made. And not only that, but you got to have somebody to act as a priest. So what do? Well, you just take one of your sons and you consecrate him. You set him aside to conduct that activity. So there must be some idea of the Levitical priesthood, wouldn't you think, for them to be doing this? But are they anywhere close? No, of course not. Not when you worship idols. The second command, you remember what the second command was? You shall not make any graven image. How do you miss this as an Israelite? How is this not handed down? I mean, we've got this posted all over the country, and it's causing debate all the time. Take it away, put it in, take it away, put it in. The Ten Commandments. Seems like everybody has some idea of what the Ten Commandments are, or at least they know about them. And here's the Israelites just blowing this off. Well, that's what you do when you do what is right in your own eyes. Now, verse 7, what we find is the story goes on. So he's got quite a setup. I've always thought about, you know, how man sets up his own religion. And I go back in my mind, back to Wisconsin when I did that cleaning. And I tromped through the snow, and I dropped the vacuum hose through the window. And when I got down in that basement, and I'm going through the rooms, and I'm trying to hook up the different things, I came across one little room, and it was a shrine. It was a place where this person would go and worship, had their little image, a little kneeling mat or something like that. Never seen anything like it since, but in home had their own setup. And I remember thinking about, wow, you know, talk about just having your own setup. That's what Micah has. Verse 7, there was a young man from Bethlehem in Judah, of the family of Judah. He was a Levite, and he was staying there. The man departed from the city of Bethlehem in Judah to stay wherever he could find a place. Then he came to the mountains of Ephraim to the house of Micah as he journeyed. And Micah said to him, "Where do you come from?" So he said to him, "I'm a Levite from Bethlehem in Judah, and I am on my way to find a place to stay." Micah said to him, "Dwell with me, and be a father and a priest to me, and I will give you 10 shekels of silver per year, a suit of clothes, and your sustenance." So the Levite went in. Then the Levite was content to dwell with the man, and the young man became like one of his sons to him. So Micah consecrated the Levite, and the young man became his priest and lived in the house of Micah. Then Micah said, "Now I know that the Lord will be good to me, since I have a Levite as priest." Now you read that, and you know that is just so wrong, all wrong. But you got a young man who's out, and he's just looking for a place. And there's a lot of times that that's what happens. We might be a Christian, we're just looking for a place, and we find ourselves just getting ourselves a sweet deal, and it's all wrong, but you know what? We're just doing what's right in our own eyes, because God is not ruling over us. There was no king in Israel. Well, you know, without the Lord Jesus Christ ruling as king over our own lives, you see, I would ask, do you have a king today? You say, well, no, not in America, we don't have a king. We are ruled by a king, and that is King Jesus. And so, yes, we have a king. And so we cannot do what is right in our own eyes. But you and I can falsely believe that everything is okay in our life spiritually. But when Jesus isn't truly reigning in our thoughts and in our mind through the Word and understanding it, then what we do, sadly, is everything may not be okay because we're doing what we want to do. Well, it's very interesting that this young man would stumble upon Micah's house of all places. And as he's there, he gets a pretty sweet setup. I mean, after all, he gets paid, he gets clothes, he gets his food. And so he takes that deal and he dwells in his house. Micah is so much full of himself that he can even do the consecration and make somebody and set them apart to serve in that type of holy way. But if you know anything about the law of Moses, this isn't right. But isn't it sad that verse 13, as we read, says, "Now I know that the Lord will be good to me. I've got everything that I need." You know, there's a lot of people that that's the way they feel. They feel that I've got everything set up now, and it's completely wrong, but they think now God is going to accept me, and I'm going to be blessed. When the King of Kings does not guide us and lead us, we will do what is right in our own eyes. And I'm afraid that this can happen to us at times as you think about this, because, again, this is our counterpart, if you would, under the Old Testament. These are God's people, like we are God's people today. And there's a host of teaching that is often ignored by God's people. God's teaching on the law of marriage, maybe on the subject of kindness or forgiveness or mercy, or maybe on the subject of the tongue, which is an article in the bulletin, or maybe the subject of modesty. His teaching on what you do when you have something against someone that has ought against you, or you have ought against somebody. You see, we can just have that teaching, but when it's not really a part of our life, we just kind of, well, it doesn't matter. I'll do it the way I want to do it. Does that sound familiar? Well, this is what it looks like when a man is not letting God rule over him. He's just doing what he wants to do. And then you come into chapter 18. And you've got the tribe Dan now. And we don't have time to look at all of this, but the story doesn't end. the tribe of Dan has decided, because they have not, Judges chapter 1 and verse 34, they did have their territory given to them, but Dan had been forced into the mountains by the Amorites, where we find them looking for a place to dwell now in Joshua chapter 19, verse 47. So they've got a small area, but now they've decided, we need to branch out. We need to find some place. And as the text says, it says as though they had not gotten their territory. And so what they do is they set out. Now they're setting out, and there's no king in Israel. Now, five men of valor from the tribe of Dan are selected, and they're said, go out and search the land. Guess whose house they stumble upon? I don't know if he's got a big house that just sticks out, that everybody just, he's got a neon sign or something, but everybody seems to find Micah's house that's up to no good. So he's got that set up. He's got his priest. And so these five valiant men, men of valor come, and they end up in the house, and oddly enough, they go, wait a minute, I recognize that voice. That ever happened to you? I recognize that voice. And so they want to know, why are you here? And you know what he tells them? He tells them about the sweet deal that he's got. I'm a priest in Micah's home. And so they stick that in their memory bank. And as they go on north, they find a very quiet city. And it talks about how they kept to themselves. They were at peace. They didn't have any allies. They were just kind of out there. And basically, the tribe of Dan, those five men, say, that's where we want to go. So they go back home. And they tell them, hey, we found a place to go dwell. This is one of the tribes of Israel. This is, again, God's people who haven't done as they're supposed to and run everybody out. Now they're out just wandering around trying to find territory. And so if you look at your map, I meant to put one up, you'll see that we've got Dan to the north, and you've got a spot of Dan. And so you've got this question is why? Well, here we're learning why. So they come back and they tell them about what they want to do. So they choose 600 men, soldiers, to go. And you know what? On their way back up, they stop at Micah's house. And when they get to Micah's house, we find out that they say, hey, you can just see him as they're, what's going on over there? What? Well, he's got his own priest, and he's got a household full of idols. He's got an ephod, a molten image. He's got this deal. You know what? They say, go take it. So those five men go in, carry it all out of the house. Now they're taking it with them. And the Levite, the young man, he's wondering, what are you doing? They said, well, listen, you want to be a priest for just one man, or you want to be a priest for the whole tribe? I'm going to take that deal. So he does. And off he goes. And off he goes. Look at verse 20. So the priest's heart was glad. He took the ephod, the household idols, and the carved image, and took his place among the people. Dan goes on to conquer Laish and burns it to the ground, rebuilds it, and names it Dan. But let's look at verse 30. Then the children of Dan set up for themselves the carved image, and Jonathan the son of Gershom, the son of Manasseh, and his sons were priests to the tribe of Dan until the day of the captivity of the land. Well, they're in the north. So until Assyrian captivity, they kept on with this sinful practice. Now, I want you to think about how long that is, because we haven't seen King Saul, David, Solomon, the wicked kings of the north. It kind of reminds you of when Jeroboam set up the images in Dan to the north. So they continued this sinful activity. We have to be careful, because things catch on. So they set up for themselves Micah's carved image, which he made all the time that the house of God was in Shiloh, verse 31. But let's back up as we close. Let's go back to Micah. He picks back up in verse 22. So the priest is going, and then all of a sudden, everybody in the neighborhood becomes on alert. Something's going on. And so today we'd call it the old Brother Ryan, the posse is rounded up to find out we're going to go after and get our stuff back. Verse 20, so the priest's heart was glad. Verse 21, then they turned and departed and put the little ones, the livestock, and the goods in front of them. When they were a good way from the house of Micah, the men who were in the houses near Micah's house gathered together and overtook the children of Dan. And they called out to the children of Dan. So they turned around and said to Micah, what ails you that you have gathered such a company? So he said, you have taken away my gods, which I made, and the priest, and you have gone away. Now what more do I have? How can you say to me, what ails you? The children of Dan said to him, do not let your voice be heard among us, lest angry men fall upon you and you lose your life with the lives of your household. So the children of Dan went their way, and when Micah saw that they were too strong for him, he turned and went back to his house. What do you find interesting about that? Micah's gods didn't deliver him, did they? Those things were just picked up and carried away. Micah was not willing to give his life for an ephod, his household idols and a molten image. He wasn't willing to lose his life for that. Does that make you think about what the apostles were willing to do for the gospel of Jesus Christ? False versus true things. Verse 24, you've taken away my gods. Did you notice what he said? Which I made. Why is it that ding, 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 the lights and the bells and the whistles don't go off? Well, when God is not reigning and ruling, or for us today, when Jesus is not Lord over our lives, over my life, I'll do what's right in my own eyes. I won't see how blinded I am. How foolish to worship something with your own hands, made with your own hands. And yet people do it all the time. If I had been watching, I would have seen probably a few boats going out to fish because they might catch some fish with a little bit of rain. People's homes, their golf clubs, way ahead of God. And here's another thing. With 200 shekels of silver, he could have gone back to mom and said, Mom, can I get another 200? He could start it all over again. He could just repeat it. Pick one of his sons and consecrate them. Maybe they learned a little bit more over the years and they get a little bit better at it. The text doesn't tell us that, but what it is showing us is what happens when there is no leadership over people, when God is not in control. When he's ignored, his leadership rejected, you simply doing what is right in your own eyes. Jesus said to his disciples, very plainly, I have to deny myself. And really, that's what happens to those who will heed this lesson and say, you know what, it's not about me doing what is right in my own eyes, it's about being faithful and serving God to the best of my ability because of all that he has done for me. I have to let go of my own will. And that's a big problem, is I have to surrender my will. And as Jesus so fervently prayed in the garden, he said, thy will be done. Father, thy will be done. And so maybe you're here this morning and what you've done and what you're doing is you're just serving your own self. You're just doing what you want to do. This lesson is timeless because it teaches us that God has to rule over our lives. We have to let the will of God be what conducts and or directs our life and the character and conduct that follows. If not, then we find ourselves in just horrible states where, as I said, you continue 19, 20, and 21, and it only gets worse. Very, very much worse. And so I encourage you again to read that. If you're here this morning and you're not a child of God, I want to encourage you to think very seriously about doing that because Jesus is the only way to be able to come to the Father but your sins separate you. It's not a matter of can God save me? It's not on his end. It's whether or not I will humble myself and be obedient to his plan, because I understand what Jesus has done for me and that it is his precious blood that can wash my sins away. But I have to be willing to change. I have to be willing to open my mouth and let others know that I believe in Jesus, and I have to be willing to be immersed in water to wash my sins away. If you're a child of God and something is amiss and you need prayers on your behalf, we want to encourage you to take advantage of this opportunity now as we stand and sing.